The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
To begin, after 160 years of operating here, Ulster Bank yesterday announced it will exit the Republic of Ireland. The bank, which is owned by NatWest, will leave in a phased withdrawal over the coming years. But what does it mean for the 1.1 million customers, 2,800 staff and 20.5 billion loan book? Joining me now is Brian Hayes, Chief Executive of the Banking and Payments Federation Ireland. Brian, are we into another moment of green jersey, the taxpayers, the government having to pump money into Irish banks?
Well, I don't know about that, Anya. Certainly yesterday was a very difficult day for Ulster Bank staff, for their customers, for the management, the whole team of Ulster Bank, because as you rightly say at the opening there, they have been in the country many, many years, good employers. I know Jane Howard. She is a retail banker to her fingertips, and I know she and her management team want to do their best in terms of the withdrawal over the course of the next number of years and delivering for their customers. So this is not a good day for the sector. I fully recognise that. But I think in the full light of day, sort of 24 hours after the announcement, this is kind of a wake-up call as well. We have to start asking ourselves, why is this bank, which was in the country so many years, leaving Ireland and deciding that it can no longer be profitable in Ireland? And there are really big, big issues, complicated issues that we need to go through and understand in trying to understand the kind of factors that are underlying some of these decisions for the sector right now.
And what do you think is at the heart of the Ulster Bank decision?
I think at the heart of it, this is a big group, NatWest, which has to hold about 20% of its total capital in Ireland, in an economy the size of Greater Manchester. And I suspect it's asking itself this question in the course of the last number of years and months. Could that capital be deployed elsewhere? I think, you know, there's a big question we've got to ask ourselves. These are public limited companies, PLCs. A PLC is owned by its shareholders. The shareholders ordinarily expect maybe 5 or 6, 7% a year of return. And if the rate of return, if the return on equity is so small, and profitability isn't there, there are huge questions. If you look at the return on equity in the Irish market last year, it was minus 5% across a European average of 2%. So if I'm a PLC and I'm saying, come and invest and put shares into my company and I can't make money, well, it's a business decision. So we have to kind of untangle this. And there are commercial realities behind this sector in terms of equity right now, and the huge amount of capital that has to be held for understandable reasons.
And just, yeah, on that, the understandable reasons that so much capital is held by European, you know, by European standards and best practices is as a direct result of the losses on loans, yes, that were incurred back during the crisis and the extent of the property crash. And when you read Cliff Taylor today, you can see that is the rainy day fund. In the years problems up ahead, we may be thankful for the fact that so much capital has been held back.
So it's really important that we have well-capitalised banks. We're not going back to the appalling mistakes that were made by the sector 10 years ago. We're not going back there anytime soon. And the Central Bank of Ireland and the ECB have a fundamental job to do, and a good job that they do in terms of making sure that we have well-capitalised positions in our Irish banks. However, the other side of the equation is, if you have this enormous amount of capital, which is needed for stability purposes, because we have a risky history in Ireland, the other side of the equation is the cost of credit is exceptionally higher. One example, I'm an Irish bank. I give you 100,000 to build your house. I have to hold on my balance sheet real money of 5,500 euro for every 100,000 I give you. If I'm a French or a German bank, I have to hold 2,000. Now, that's real money. It's not imaginary money. It's real money that the bank has to get in the market. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why cost of credit is more expensive here. And I think, you know, we did a piece of work, BPFI, which we published on Monday, a very big deep dive into the mortgage market in Ireland. And it highlights that even as we replace the older, riskier book with a new, better book, thanks to the macroprudential rules, in fairness to the Irish Central Bank, they deserve credit for that. And the governor and the team, they have rightly said the macroprudential rules, 3.5 times income, is a good prudential form of lending. And there's no real disagreement in the sector. We have some issues around the margins of it, but no real fundamental disagreement. But if that's the new lending standard, that we now have a better book. And the question that the sector is asking is, when are we going to get some relief for that better book, which is less risky than the old book? And I think that's one of the, if you have to hold a huge amount of capital, it definitely affects your profitability. And for a big group like NatWest will ask the question, can they deploy their capital elsewhere in a more efficient way?
And now that they've decided that they can and should, a lot of customer advocacy groups are saying in the last particularly 48 hours and over the last 5 months of speculation that it is customers who will now suffer. It's small businesses in this country that will suffer. You're going to see upward pressure on lending interest rates. You're going to see weaker credit availability at a time that is just unprecedented for people already. So what about the customer in all of this?
So the customer has to be absolutely central in all this. So the banks at the moment are facing a kind of a perfect storm. On one side, they said last year that they're putting provisions for about $3 billion of loan losses as a consequence of COVID. On the other side, they're seeing little enough appetite for new credit, understandably, because Irish businesses have built up quite a significant cash reserve. And we have to get back to lending at some point. And I can understand the psychological effects of thinking about, am I too indebted? Do I need to take out more debt? So it's crucial that the banks, who are the natural capital intermediaries in the Irish economy, the capital investors, they make small businesses, corporates, households, they make those investment decisions happen. It's crucial that we get the lending right. And I think as we go forward, we've got to make sure that those who remain in the market, that we have a competitive market. We're beginning to see non-bank lenders coming into the SME market, for instance. We have very substantial banks, current pillar banks, who have huge knowledge in the business sector. So we've got to make sure that when we come out of this lockdown, that the banks are fully working for the purposes of investment.
And we know competition is good for the consumer.
Yes.
So we've seen a lot of suggestions around the need for a third pillar. Even back in 2018, you had the head of the ECB saying Irish banking market is a quasi-monopoly. That could potentially worsen here. Where do you stand on that idea of the AIB, the BOI duopoly, that there is need for a third massive competitive force in this country?
Well our organisation, and we speak for all of the retail banks, the international banks, payment service companies, We want to see competition. We want to see a sustainable economic model behind the banking sector in Ireland, which delivers profitability, but also economic sustainability, because there's no point building a nuclear reactor that goes off that we saw 10 years ago. But I would make the point that the new environment that banks have to work in, the regulatory environment, the supervisory environment, needs banks of scale because of the cost of regulation at a European and local level. It needs banks that are big. If you look, for instance, I'll make a simple point. 10 years ago, we had we had 8,000 banks in Europe. We now have about 6,000. 7 years ago, we had we've seen a reduction in the last 7 years of branches by about 50%. Mm-hmm. So the new branch is your digital phone. It's not the kind of distribution models that we've seen in the past. So there's a huge change going on in the sector, driven a lot, I think, by adaptation and digital. And what we've seen as a consequence of COVID is the dramatic escalation of that change that's coming down the track, and the banks have to respond to that.
And one of the dangers in all of this is that this loan book could be sold to venture or to vulture banks, rather. Do you think Ulster Bank has a responsibility to ensure that that does not happen?
Well, Ulster Bank have already said yesterday that they're in discussions with other banks in Ireland. Let us wait and see the outcome of that. We've no position in that entirely. It's a matter for these are commercial entities who will make that decision. But I would make the point about credit servicing firms, which you describe as vulture funds. You know, there's a place for credit servicing firms in a normal functioning market.
But are we in a normal functioning market? We're not, given what happened 10 years ago.
Well, you see, the Irish banks had to get rid of their non-performing loans. They were told to reduce that. We still have twice the level of non-performing loans in Ireland as we have in other countries. The issue of security, of the enforcement of security that we highlighted in our report last week is a major issue. That, like, you know, if people are comparing us to Germany and France, well, they need to start understanding that a German or French bank can get an asset back and 45% of it on its balance sheet. We could get 11% back in Ireland. It takes you 10 months to repossess a house in the United Kingdom. It takes you 44 months here. So we're paying a very high price for fundamental issues which have not been addressed in this sector for a very long time.
And paying the high price, we're only at the beginnings of starting to understand the fallout of COVID. In hopefully the months and years to come, the wage subsidies will be removed and government supports. But on the downside, we're going to see companies fail. We're going to see a massive jobs crisis potentially. Are the banks now set up to be able to have flexibility, to be able to respond to really challenging times ahead?
I think you're absolutely right. At the end of this, when those supports come down, there will be viable businesses and non-viable businesses. There will be a new economy. There will be fundamental changes. One of the things I will say about the Irish banks, because of their experience in the last 10 years dealing with the level of non-performing loans, all of the big Irish banks in terms of the retail banks in Ireland have really good systems for doing deep dives on business lending. They have a very good business relationship. There's expertise across, say, the hospitality sector, the transport sector. And they've worked with customers. Typically, business lending is of a shorter duration, obviously a more risky duration, but it's a shorter duration than ordinary mortgage lending. So I'm very confident that the banks will work with businesses, working solutions out. They recognise the cash flow issues that are there right now, but banks have an absolute responsibility to work with their customers to get good solutions. And the Irish sector has produced those solutions over the course of the last decade.
Okay, thank you. Brian Hayes, Chief Executive of the Banking and Payments Federation Ireland.